It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 37, a podcast which looks at news and views from throughout the world and does so from a Christian perspective. This week, we're going to look at the US and the UK and New Zealand and Australia. And we've also got this just amazing piece to start with from Ukraine. Have a listen to this.
Температура зашкалювала і бах! І на молекули. Перед вами територія полураспада в хаотичному движенні.
То есть Украины больше нет?
Почему же нет? Есть. Где она? А вот легитимная Украина, правда, без строящей.
That's from a television show that I started watching on Netflix called Servant of the People. It's in Russian. It's about a history teacher in Ukraine. It's a comedy about a history teacher in Ukraine who goes on a rant about the corruption in the country and ends up being elected president when it's put on YouTube. Well, in probably the most surreal case of reality imitating art, what's going on in Ukraine just now is almost precisely that. The 41-year-old comedian Volodymyr Zelensky, who plays the lead character in that sitcom, is currently leading in the Ukrainian presidential election over Petro Poroshenko, the leader seeking re-election. You heard it right. A comedian who plays a role of someone being elected as president, an ordinary person, is now likely to be elected president of the Ukraine. Why is that happening? It's because I think people so identify with the frustration that is expressed because of the corruption within the culture. It is surreal. But it's not the only thing that's surreal. We keep trying to keep you up to date with the rapid disintegration of our culture and how language is being used. But this was a new one for me as well. Listen to the astonishment from Piers Morgan on the Good Morning Britain as he faces up to this new term, childism.
Childism is the normalization of the mistreatment of children just because they're young. You know, like assuming that they can't have opinions or ideas, you know, that they can't, you know, obviously they do need guidance and structure, but mistreating them or treating them like property or denying their identity and autonomy.
So giving a child a gender because of its anatomy, assuming that they're boy or girl, or giving them a name, all that would be childism from your point of view.
Not giving them, but forcing them to use them regardless of what the child wanted.
So if a three-year-old child decides, I'm no longer a boy or girl, I'm no longer...
And a new one for me as well is they-bees. You don't have babies anymore, you have they-bees. Because a baby is not male or female. They will decide their gender later on. They won't have it assigned them at birth. It's nothing to do with biology. And so that babies are called they-bees. But we had this situation where it was a non-binary trans father who calls their child Sparrow, but won't tell anyone whether they're boy or girl biologically because they don't want them to be stereotyped in that way. Living, by the way, in a partnership of three. We are witnessing something akin to the last days of the Roman Empire. Childism. But this one's even more incredible. A good friend of ours, Mark Powell, who's a Presbyterian minister in Australia, wrote an article for The Spectator magazine. And again, by the way, we have links on the website to most of the articles on which this news is based. And we have Mark's article up there, and it's entitled, Mother, Sister, Brother, Produce a Baby. Now, I had to reread and reread this one to try and get my head round it. Well, apparently, a postmenopausal 61-year-old grandmother has just given birth to a child that is the product of sperm from her son-in-law, her son's husband, and her daughter's egg. This has apparently occurred in Nebraska with a woman called Cecile Elege, who's become the surrogate, or now apparently the correct term is gestational carrier, for her son Matthew and his husband Elliot Doherty. Okay, alright, I'm trying to get around this. To help save on costs, Matthew's sister Leah provides her eggs for free. According to Matthew, people were genuinely curious. They even had questions about incest. But this is so new and so unique. People didn't understand at first, but once they do, they're radically supportive. They think it's radical and amazing. They're really inspired by my mom. They even had questions about incest? Really? Because it is incest? This is... I'm sorry. As I said, I had to read that over and over again to try and work out what exactly was happening. But that's part of what's going on in our changing culture. Because here's another thing. This is in Canada, where an 80-year-old crucifix has been removed from the city council chambers in Montreal, Quebec, which it had a sculpture of Jesus. It's hung on the wall of the Montreal City Council since 1937. It was originally put there as a reminder to politicians to ensure their decisions are guided by God. But Laurence Lavigne Laonde, the city councilman, made this announcement and said, and boy, this is true, the crucifix was installed during an era that was completely different than the one we live in today. We now live in a society that has evolved and is represented by democratic institutions that must be secular, neutral, and open to all citizens. Except, of course, it's not secular. Or rather, it is secular on one level, but it's certainly not neutral, and it's certainly not open to all citizens. An example of that also comes from Canada, from Vancouver, where a human rights tribunal has ruled that a Christian activist discriminated against a man who claims to be female by distributing flyers that referred to the man who was running for political office at the time as a biological male. And they have ordered this person to pay $35,000 in compensation for injury to his dignity, feelings, and self-respect. Well, if I thought of the number of times that I've been attacked on social media and how much my dignity, feelings, and self-respect, I'd be a millionaire. But of course, that's not how the society works. It discriminates in favour of one group of people and against others. Now, it's interesting that this liberal intolerance is growing so strong. In fact, it's been called a liberal puritanism, which is a misuse of the word Puritan. It's a fascinating programme on BBC, The Moral Maze, which was discussing morality and money and so on. And they had the comedian Jeff Norcott on, and here he is talking about Puritanism and being answered by Giles Fraser.
Is the individual and people thinking that they've got the right to intervene in your lifestyle choices. And of course that could come from the right as well in terms of sexual preferences and stuff like that as well. So equally, I'm happy for people to just butt out.
You call it Puritanism. Mm. What's it got to do with the Puritans, this?
Well, I suppose it's the idea that there is some sort of moral purity even possible. You know, it's like that great line from The Twelfth Night, wasn't it, Toby Belch? Just because thou art a Puritan, do you think that... I don't know, I've completely butchered this. Okay. Basically, what he's saying, right, he says there shall be no more cakes and ale. So, yeah, right, you go and live your Puritan lifestyle, but don't feel like you can impose it on me.
To be honest, this is a blackadder view of Puritanism. I know you're a comedian, but this is a blackadder view of Puritanism. Actually, the Puritans thought we're all morally depraved, a lot of us, and there was no good ones and bad ones. So it's a sort of like, I think it's a bad view of the Puritans, actually.
Fair enough.
OK, Michael.
No, I think Giles was quite right. Of course, the Puritans did teach that all human beings were a mixture of good and bad, that we're all tainted by sin, and that the purpose of the law is not to impose morality upon people, but to restrain evil. The new secular, inverted commas, Puritans are far worse, because they don't believe in God, because they believe they are God. They think they can impose their morality upon everybody else. For them, it's not about restraining evil. It's about compelling good. It's about compelling speech. And it is profoundly, profoundly dangerous. Where it leads to is a kind of secular inquisition. So remember a few weeks ago, we told you about Olawolo Ilasami, and I apologise if I've got his name wrong again, who on Saturday the 23rd of February in North London, this Nigerian Christian was doing what he's done for many years, preaching the gospel, just with a Bible, standing in the street and speaking to people. And he was charged by the police. In fact, but the thing that struck me with this, that I just came across recently, is that the policeman said he was disturbing people's days. And the Nigerian preacher said, look, I'm just telling people about Jesus. And this is what the policeman said. He said, well, no one wants to listen to that. Since when did the police get to decide what we want to listen to and what we should listen to? But it's not just the police. Here's a supposed evangelical, Jane Ozan, writing a tweet about a meeting in Parliament at which the evangelist Rico Tice was due to speak, which was banned, and she was, it wasn't so much banned as there were protests about it, and the meeting was cancelled. And she was rejoicing in this. Now remember, this is someone who calls herself an evangelical Christian. She said that she was grateful to somebody for pursuing this and bringing it all to light. The Christians in Parliament meetings need to be, listen to this, they need to be closely monitored, as from experience, they tend to have speakers with clear agendas and views, which many House of Commons MPs would find deeply concerning. Here is somebody, a leading Anglican, someone who professes to be evangelical, saying we need to keep an eye on people who come and speak in the Parliament because they may have some views which some MPs find concerning. Seriously? That's almost as mad as it gets. Except listen to this on BBC Question Time. After about 50 minutes of talking about Brexit, here comes the next question.
Right, let's have a change of subject from Keith Broughton.
Is it morally right that 5-year-old children learn about LGBT issues in school?
Oh, I can hear all sorts of sounds coming from the audience here. So, Adeem, I'm going to come to you first.
Now, it was a question which asked about whether, as you heard, whether 5-year-olds should be taught about LGBT relationships. And this is the state of our culture. There was an outbreak of harmony. Everyone said, oh, yes, of course they should. It's irresponsible not to be teaching it. We've opened up the conversation, but there's consensus and warmth here. At one point, Fiona Bruce even asked, is there anyone here who disagrees with this? And when one woman put her hand up, she said to her, you're very brave. And it turned out actually to be a Muslim woman. Very brave. Here we have something that 10, 15 years ago, there at the very least would have been a great deal of discussion about, and most people probably would have opposed. But now we've got to a stage in our culture where such is the pressure that no one dares disagree that it's inappropriate for 5-year-olds to be taught about gay relationships. And forget the relationships thing. Everyone, I mean, it sounds good when you say, let's talk about relationships. This is how language is being misused again. In reality, it's teaching a particular sexual philosophy. Now, I would love to go on something like Question Time. I would love to challenge that, but they won't let me on. Of course they won't let me on. In fact, even asking the question is now considered to be wrong. So the national newspaper the next day ran a story which was headlined, BBC Question Time defends LGBT morality debate. Well, one, there was no debate, but it was what the national were objecting to, and what others were objecting to, was the fact that the question was even asked. Apparently asking, is it morally right that 5-year-old children learn about LGBTQ plus issues in school? Even asking that question is, as one put it, BBC presenter Sue Perkins, the framing of this question is deeply worrying. Holby City actor David Ames posted, this is deliberate phrasing and it's not only insulting, but damaging. Comedian Joe Lycett, again over the BBC, let me know what you guys decide so I can pack my bags for jail. Get this, even asking the question is now considered to be politically incorrect. But continuing that same theme, listen to these remarks from the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, about a new bill which is to deal with domestic abuse, and this time it's to deal with psychological abuse, coercive and controlling behaviour.
This is an important moment in our efforts to eradicate domestic abuse in Scotland. For the first time ever, the law will recognise not just physical abuse of women, but also coercive and controlling behaviour. And that is important because it sends a very strong message that physical abuse is wrong, but so too is psychological abuse. And many women who have previously felt that their abuse was hidden and not recognised, perhaps they themselves will not have recognised what they were experiencing as abuse, now know that they have the law on their side.
Who's going to argue against seeking to prevent abuse? But I have two questions about it. Number one, I don't think you are going to prevent it solely by government diktat. That's number one. But number two, as you listen to Sturgeon, what was she saying was this? She was saying coercive and controlling behaviour is by men against women. I'm assuming the bill is not as discriminatory as that, and will allow for the fact that there are women who have coercive and controlling behaviour. But maybe there's another thought that springs to mind for me is this. Is there anything more coercive and controlling than a liberal, inverted commas, government on a moral crusade? Think of Montreal City Council. Think of the Toronto judges. Think of the London police. Think of the BBC. Think of the national newspaper. Think of the Scottish government. They all seek to coerce and control. It's assumed that, you know, Canada, Scotland, the United Kingdom, progressives in America, and of course New Zealand are considered to be really progressive countries, but and tolerant countries, but only in some ways. So in this fascinating article about New Zealand being really such a tolerant country, New Zealand is seen as a beacon of liberalism, okay? And that's been increased since the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, her leadership following the killings of the mosque, I think, has been pretty well exemplary. However, this was not reported in the media. The New Zealand government has just rejected the appeal of a British woman who was headhunted for a £75,000 a year IT job in New Zealand. And they have banned her 15-year-old daughter, Bumika, from joining her. Her father, the mother, the two sisters, all receive visas, but Bumika's application is rejected on the ground that her health is not of an acceptable standard because she suffers from Down syndrome. The family have said they will pay for everything involved, it won't be any burden, but nonetheless, she has been turned down, and she's been turned down because she's disabled. You understand that? As the mother said, it's complete discrimination. She has a moderate disability, but she can talk, walk, and dress herself. But that's not enough. And as I said last week, when we showed the video of the Muslim leader saying that it was the Jews to blame or Mossad to blame for the mosque massacres, no action has been taken against them. So be careful when you describe a country as tolerant and liberal. It only is in certain ways. Of course, when I think of the disabled, I think of the child in the womb and the danger to that child if they are disabled in the womb. Fascinating that a movie has just come out called Unplanned, which you may have heard of, which is the story of Abby Johnson, who was a Planned Parenthood Employee of the Year, but when she saw an abortion, changed her mind and became a campaigner against it.
Our first order of business is to present Planned Parenthood's Employee of the Year Award. Abby Johnson.
You'll actually be in charge of the abortions at your clinic?
I have a chance to make a real difference.
No matter what you do for the rest of your life, you're still gonna be a baby killer.
The only thing that's changed is you, Abby. Can you even hear yourself talk right now about these procedures? These are little babies.
I'm not going to apologize for doing a job that helps women in crisis. I saw it. It was like it was twisting and fighting for its life.
We commend the souls of these hundreds of children
And Lord, we pray to end.
Now, I was intrigued over the weekend to find that Twitter, on my Twitter feed, said it had been banned, not the movie, but the movie's Twitter feed. After a fuss, they reinstated it. Also, that movie has been rated as R, you know, 18 plus, because it's considered to be too gory for people to see. And The Guardian had this review which complained about gore. Gore, blood in almost everything else is fine, it's daring, but showing an abortion, or showing what an abortion is, or describing it, no, that's too much. Well, here's a challenge for our liberals. If you really are pro-choice, then logically, choice, you need as much information as possible. So maybe before someone chooses to have an abortion, they should find out what abortion really is. Maybe they should see what it really is. I suspect if they did, the number of abortions would be dramatically reduced. What's going on in our culture, I think, is as this new ideology that we've been talking about, this liberal progressivism, is not based on fact, and it's certainly not based on science. In fact, it's become anti-science. Quillette has this article about an astrophysicist from Australia who's moved to China. And why has he moved to China? Because, he says, the political climate in Australian universities is one of the main reasons why I left. It's very hard to find a tenure job in astronomy if you don't belong to a protected group. Alas, I'm a white, hetero Christian male. And or you don't do enough visible activism, or at least enough virtue signalling, for a number of green left issues. And he said, just very simply, unlike my Australian boss, my current Chinese boss has never berated me for not being socialist enough. See, the ideology, this new ideology, is anti-science. And sometimes it talks about science, but it's pseudoscience that comes in as well. And again, in a wonderful article by Matt Ridley in The Spectator, he talks about how pseudoscience is being used to back up policy in different ways. We don't have time to go into all of this, but there's the famous example of the Roundup weed killer, which is supposed to increase the incidence of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So The Guardian runs with exposure to weed killing products increases risk of cancer by 41%. Yet, that is scientifically highly, highly questionable. And what happens is newspapers, other people, just use the science that suits them and debunks the science that doesn't suit them. Now, I think as Christians, we can do the same as well. But we have a priori commitment to truth, and we have to go where the facts lead us. But that is not the case with liberalism. So what's going on in our culture? I think there was a program, unbelievable. Listen to Melvin Bragg, who's one of the foremost broadcasters, one of the best broadcasters in the UK. This is what he's saying about the influence of the Bible.
I wrote a book, as you mentioned, about the Bible at the 400th anniversary, because I knew people were going to dismiss it. And I just traced the influence of it, which is phenomenal around the world, but not only in Bible studies and in churches, but in all sorts of culture, in philanthropy, in laws to alleviate the poor, in every way you could think of. It's been extraordinary, and it's now lost, and I'm outraged by it. I just think it's a complete disgrace. It's another of the disappointments that one has with this country. You wouldn't think of knocking down all the cathedrals because people don't go. But we have knocked down cathedrals of language that are unique in the world. That's what we've done. And they say it's difficult. It isn't difficult. Shakespeare's a bit difficult, and Shakespeare's ragingly popular in schools, in universities. It's just how you teach it, how you play it, how you distribute it. It's an executive decision made by some of these dumb executives, and some of them are in the Church of England.
Words do change things. And the importance of William Tyndale and the King James Version in shaping our culture needs to be recognized. What's happening now is, as we've seen throughout this podcast, we're seeing words being used to change our culture again, so that the idea of male and female becomes meaningless. The idea of motherhood. For example, on Mother's Day, I received a tweet which said, well, mothering is just about love. It's got nothing to do with biology. I'm sorry, you don't become a mother without biology. So science is being debunked. History is being debunked. Any concept of truth is being debunked. And that's because we've turned away from truth and we've turned away from the Bible. I love what Bragg says about we've knocked down a cathedral of language. Indeed we have. Our society has become incredibly destructive. It's not really building anything in the place. It's destroyed our Christian roots, or pulling up our Christian roots, knocked down our Christian walls. And what's it replacing it with? A world in which someone can seriously say, well, we're going to say that our child is not male or female. We're going to leave them to choose later on. And we're not going to tell people what genitals they have. That's one thing. A world in which science is debunked. A world in which truth is only determined by popularity. Okay, let me finish up with a couple of things. Please do listen to this, for I thought this was just absolutely brilliant. Here's a difference between Americans and the British. Now, the story behind this is the rock band The Cure were being inducted into some Hall of Fame, and as you can hear, the American reporter gets really, really excited.
Hey, how are you? I'm Carrie. It's so nice to meet you. Hi. Congratulations, The Cure Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees 2019. Are you as excited as I am?
By the sounds of it, no.
Oh, no. What are we going to do?
I'm sure we'll get there eventually. It's a bit early, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is. Maybe we just need a few drinks.
God forbid.
One of the things that amused me this week as well was a sign I saw from the United States, which says, road unsafe when this sign is underwater. Do you know, that's a bit like our culture. Our culture's in great danger when we're being drowned in this swamp of atheistic secularism. I'll leave you with our quote of the week, and please do remember, you can support the podcast. You go on to Podbean, our fundraiser there, and you can help us as we just seek to keep this going. You can support it also by sending us in stories. It's great to have stories from around the world. We did Ukraine this week. Let's see what other countries we can do next week. But somebody who listens to this sent me or asked me to look at The Noble Liar by Robin Aitken, which was subtitled How and Why the BBC Distorts the News to Promote a Liberal Agenda. So far, this is my book of the year. It is utterly, utterly brilliant. And you will hear me refer to it over the coming weeks several times. Utterly brilliant. I leave you with one quote from that. And Robin Aitken, by the way, was a BBC reporter. He says this, in conclusion, our ruling elite in Britain, the politicians, lawyers, academics and media people, view the current state of affairs as a positive thing. We have banished superstition, they say, rejoicing at the thought. But there remains a sceptical minority who look at the society brought into being by this type of thinking and see little to admire. The liberal hegemony has created an unhappy society which doesn't really know what it believes in. And whether you are a supporter of the current orthodoxy or not, here is one thing you can rely on. It is not permanent. The qualities that make Christianity a force to be reckoned with, the truth that wins human hearts and compels beliefs, will not change and will go on winning converts to its banner. In the coming years, who is to say whether the old beliefs will not triumph again over the arid fictions of our current noble lie? That's why we're here. May God bless you. See you next week. I thought we won the battle, but it really looks like we're losing it. What we do seems insignificant, so limited in our influence. They don't listen to our message. We scream and yell it. They say it's irrelevant. It's the greatest story ever told, but the television ain't telling it. So often they just mock our faith, and it makes me want to hide my face. While we sitting on our hands with no plans, like we got time to waste. The culture could change if someone stepped up for the cause to rep us in our guard. But who will accept the job? If only we had better rappers to gain us more respect, to validate what we believe and keep our name up in the press. But God does not use the same methods as the world. He chose the fool.
bring his message to the world. We were rescued from the world. He left us here to be his servants. We don't need more superstars. We need more gospel-centered churches. Working as the body to bring the gospel to the nations. Even when we face rejection, Jesus is our validation. And we will be vindicated. Yeah, we know his path is narrow. To follow him requires more than bumper.